It's the Rob Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. And look who just walked into the studio, our very dear friend.
Hi, Dr. Lauren.
I never say old. I say dear friend. Mm-hmm. Dr. Lauren Stryker is here. And she is now, it's very, very, this is a big deal now. You basically are in charge of sexual health at Northwestern.
For all of Chicago.
Right.
If not the country.
Yes.
It's a lot of work to get done.
Yeah, it is. It's a big responsibility, but I am willing to take it on.
Oh, you are. You're so good at it, too.
Now, what? Now, there's a story today. This is interesting because Northwestern's doing this this symposium, is that probably the best way to put it?
Yeah. Well, so to return to what you just said, I mean, essentially what's going on at Northwestern is very exciting because Northwestern has decided that they are going to be incredibly supportive of this mission, and we are starting a comprehensive center for sexual health and also for menopause, which will open in 2017. So they're really focusing on the idea that no matter what your medical problem is, whether it's heart disease, diabetes, cancer, depression, that this has sexual repercussions. And so we're doing a series of programs. And this Friday, we are doing a program which is specifically geared towards women with cardiovascular disease, women who've had a heart attack, who just have had cardiac problems, because what we now really appreciate is that these women are at extremely high risk for having sexual problems. So we have a community event, which is open to anyone who wants to come, which means not only women who have cardiac disease, but those in their life who care about them and love them, mm-hmm. and that they can come to this event on Friday. It's all morning. And this has a number of speakers that will be talking about improving survivorship, whether it's, you know, talking about exercise, food, psychologically, what's going on with them. And then, of course, I will be talking about sexual health post-cardiac disease and how to make sure that things not only work like they're supposed to, but that you're not afraid to do what you want to.
So there was kind of a scary statistic here. You said that about two-thirds of women who have had heart attacks don't ever have sex again.
That's correct.
Out of fear.
That's correct. And for most of them, they have gotten the medical okay to do so if they've asked, which is a whole other issue. Mm-hmm. But it's not out of a medical reason. It's because of fear. Either their own fear that something bad, they're going to have another heart attack if they have sex, but also fear on the part of their spouse. I mean, who wants to be the guy who's in bed with their wife and they finally
and
have sex
them?
And kills them, yeah. Right? Yeah. Right. So they just kind
it's
of
It's a story,
say,
though. I'll tell you, it's a story that lives at the bar.
Oh,
you
know, my gosh.
That, Nelson Rockefeller won't be the only one in that club. But the truth of the matter is that this is a huge concern and no one's talking about it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of this sense of just be happy to be alive and arrange your flowers and, you know, do other things and don't have sex. And the sad part is that's just not the way it needs to be, because for the overwhelming majority of these women, it is perfectly safe to have sexual activity once they've recovered from their heart attack. They need to get the okay from their cardiologist, of course. But I just have to tell you one specific fact that is
Here you go, Ro.
Reassuring,
a medical
but
fact.
Kind of depressing.
Okay. I'm ready.
The amount of energy it takes to have sex with your spouse mm-hmm. in your own bed mm-hmm. is the same amount of energy mm-hmm. it takes to go for a 5-minute walk at a 4-mile-an-hour pace.
Oh.
Five minutes seems like a long time.
Just think about that, though.
Now, so it's not a rigorous activity
exactly,
or exercise.
Exactly. And what's also interesting is that some of the early studies to see how much does your heart rate and blood pressure and all that go up, well, they were done in the lab. You know, think Masters and Johnson, where they bring someone in the lab and they hook them up and they say, okay, have at it, go have sex while we watch. And believe
a lot of
it or
anxiety,
not, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden it was very exciting and the heart rates were high and the blood pressure was high and everyone started thinking, whoa, this is kind of dangerous. And then they realized, well, wait a minute, let's just hook people up in the privacy of their own homes, in their own beds with their own spouses. And they found, lo and behold, there was really like hardly a budge in heart rate.
Right.
I don't know what that says, though.
So that's
how boring sex becomes after a while regular partner.
Anyway.
As Jim Johnson once told us, sex in Wisconsin, only one partner has to be awake at a time.
Oh, gosh.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
But the caveat is important, though, that it's not the same if you're having sex not with your partner, not in your bedroom. So you can only imagine all the exciting scenarios that might make your heart rate go sky high. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about
regular partners.
Right. Yeah. And heart disease, I mean, and again, heart disease can strike people You know, obviously there's actuarial tables about where it does in life, but it can, there's a whole spectrum of this. And so there's people who, you know, are freaked out, right?
Absolutely. And to their point, it's not just older people. And in fact, at the symposium on Friday, they have a patient who's going to be speaking about her experience having a heart attack, and she was in her 30s. So, and someone who you would never, ever expect to have had a heart attack. So it can strike at any time in life. It is the number one killer of women. But on the other hand, the survivorship rate is gone, is continually getting higher. So what that means is that even though the numbers are very high of women that have heart attacks, the number of survivors are also high, which is why we're starting to look at these other things.
Remind us too, Dr. Stryker, because I just went through this with my mom. She went to the hospital with it was a back pain.
Yeah.
And we forget that women, it presents differently. And I know you're not a cardiologist, but the basics of what we look for is important.
Absolutely. You know, I think when everyone thinks of a heart attack, they think of this crushing chest pain and shortness of breath, and that it's going to be like a sign lights up and says, hello, you're having a heart attack. And for women, that's just not the case. For women, it can be very atypical, as you said. It might be back pain, it might be neck pain, it might be arm pain, it might be feeling a little nauseated, you know. And
I have all of that right
it
now.
Could be, you have all of that right
You can't talk about medical issues.
911
without him thinking he has it.
So it's very important to be aware that it doesn't always present in this typical fashion, and mm-hmm. to have a high index of suspicion. And women are caretakers. So if their spouse said, I'm having XYZ symptom, they tend to say, let's get you right to the doctor, let's get to the hospital. Women tend to say, oh, whatever, you know, I'm sure it's nothing, I'll deal with this tomorrow. And I don't know what happened in your mother's case, if it was her own idea to go or if someone said,
It was so severe, you're exactly right. She does not go ever, but it was so severe that she just went. An emergency amnioplasty, and then it was not a heart issue.
Angioplasty.
I'm sorry.
Did she have any clue when it happened that it was her heart?
No, she didn't. It was seriously sudden onset. The exact stuff you hear about that's so scary and so painful that it just she got in the car and drove herself to the hospital.
She drove herself to the hospital.
All right.
I'm getting every symptom right now.
But you'd mentioned fear as the trigger here for women, that they're sort of afraid to have sex, but they don't really want to talk about it or ask about it. You must find that a lot, that women are, there's something, you know, physiologically or that's keeping them away from having sex, or even a medical condition that they think either is dangerous or painful, and they don't talk about it.
They don't talk about it. And sometimes they don't talk about it because they're embarrassed. Sometimes they don't talk about it because they feel rushed at their doctor's appointment. Sometimes they don't talk about it because they think, well, this is just a normal part of aging. And unfortunately, we know that doctors are not bringing it up often enough. The statistics show us that around 3% of women will actually spontaneously talk to a doctor about their sexual issues, and it takes them an average of 18 months to do so. They're really desperate. They're saying, okay, I'm gonna do this. And then if you look at if a doctor actually says, how's your sex life, that number immediately climbs to about 20%. So, you know, I really have to look to my colleagues to say, you have to start this conversation. And even if they don't feel like they're comfortable talking about it, that's okay. Refer them. Refer them to me. Have them read my book, SexRx. Mm-hmm. It was written for that reason, because I know that this conversation isn't happening. And if your own doctor hasn't given you a solution to your problem, it doesn't mean that there isn't a solution. It just means they haven't given it to you. It's out there. There is help.
All right. It's good to know.
Let me. You know what? I'm going to take a quick break right here, and I want to ask you two other things, because I saw the story today, two stories. One, about the Zika virus on the East Coast. We have a woman who's pregnant with, and she's also has the Zika virus. She tested positive for the Zika virus and actually got sick from it.
Oh, no.
And now what kind of bubble are we going to start seeing, do we think, in North America of children born with microcephaly or any of the other symptoms of this? And what are those going to look like? And then I'm not quite sure what to do about this one. Talcum powder.
What?
Yep. There's a story about talcum powder today.
Huge awards.
I didn't see
this.
Linked to ovarian cancer.
Right. That was in the news. Still
was
in the news because
two
women got a lot of money from Johnson & Johnson because they said it was Johnson & Johnson baby powder caused that ovarian cancer.
Well, baby powder, you put that on babies. How does that make us feel, too?
Well, the thing is that the truth of the matter is that the science is not solidly behind
it. Got
it.
Okay.
All right, okay.
All right.
Save it. Hold on. We'll be right back.
Tease it.
All right.
You scared me.
Here is Violetta Powder Medic with the WGN Traffic Triple Spots. It is the Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Dr. Lauren Stryker is in the studio with us.
Scaring me to death with that talcum powder story.
Yep. Don't be scared.
She is, what is your official title now at Northwestern?
Oh, I have many titles. I'm an associate clinical professor of obstetrics and gynecology of the Feinberg School of Medicine. I'm the medical director of the Comprehensive Center for Sexual Health and Menopause. I think of myself as just queen. Some people say princess, but yeah, many titles.
Queen Stryker.
Yes,
I like
would,
that.
That princess. I think it's a better description. All right, here we go. First of all, let's finish up this talcum powder story.
There are two women who sued Johnson & Johnson saying that using talcum powder on their bottoms after they got out of the shower caused their ovarian cancer. And where this comes from is there have been sporadic reports over the last 10 to 15 years that there may be an association with talcum powder and ovarian cancer. But it's a very weak association, and it has not been proven. And quite frankly, it is virtually impossible to determine why these women got ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. So, look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to talk about whether they deserve to get this award or not. But from a medical point of view, what people need to know is if you use talcum powder, do not panic. You know, it doesn't mean that you're going to get ovarian cancer. If you like to powder your bottom, you can use a cornstarch baby powder. And I would tell patients, you know, it's probably best to avoid it until we know more. But it's not like there's this enormous association between talcum powder and ovarian cancer. There are a lot of other risk factors that we do know about that are far more important.
All talcum powders are just that particular one?
It has nothing to do with Johnson & Johnson.
Okay,
it's
got
just talc. And it actually, interestingly, talcum powder used to have asbestos in it.
Oh,
and
wow.
Asbestos is a known
carcinogen.
Well,
you didn't want your bottom to
so
catch fire, did you?
So don't put asbestos on your bottom.
No, I really wouldn't.
So a lot of people think that it may be that this association was actually more about the asbestos than the talc.
Oh,
so
boy.
It's made it to the papers as a big story.
$55 million
judgment is a big story, but medically I don't know that it's such a big story.
Okay, good to hear.
And very quickly, Zika. Obviously, we've been seeing in Central and South America, Puerto Rico is struggling with this.
It's big, yeah.
There's now a woman in the United States on the Eastern Seaboard who has Zika. She is pregnant. They're very concerned about the baby at this moment.
Right.
Are we going to see a bubble of children being born in the United States?
We're going to see an upswing in the number of Zika. Right now, the Zika that has been reported to the CDC is either someone who's traveled elsewhere or has been exposed to someone who's traveled elsewhere. But what the future is going to bring, of course, is we're going to have more people who are infected who have not traveled elsewhere. And I think we have to really get out there loud and clear and talk about prevention and avoiding mosquitoes and using condoms. And
so this is interesting.
Yes, we are going to see some babies born with microcephaly and other congenital abnormalities as a result. It's impossible right now to know the extent, but this is coming.
Because the idea here is that, and especially that a lot of people are going to be going down to Rio, Americans are going down to Rio for the Olympics, or other places affected, whether it's in, you know, for vacation or work. The issue is that there's a sexually transmitted component to this. The woman doesn't necessarily have to leave the country. Her mate can come back, have been bitten by a mosquito, not show any symptoms, and for 6 or 8 months still be contagious using, you know, blood derivative, which, you know, is semen.
That's exactly the point. And that's why we're going to start to see this increase, because while every documented case now has been with someone who they knew had traveled, this is going to start to expand, and it's coming. Yeah,
I know they were saying that the Olympic uniforms are going to be designed with Zika in mind. They're going to have repellent built into some of the fabrics and stuff. Spray them,
not
treat
enough.
Them. It's not enough to do
well,
it, but you can see how far
see
they're going.
Who actually
goes?
You know, who goes?
Yeah.
Who goes? Because
women of
I certainly wouldn't
age.
Be so quick to go if I was of reproductive age, or even if I was a guy who had a wife at home of reproductive
That's
age.
That's the other point.
About.
True.
Yeah, because you know, spouses are not going to use condoms. It's one thing to say you're single. We all know you should be using condoms anyway. Be a little bit more aware of this. But when you're talking about a married couple that's either trying to get pregnant or is using another method of contraception, let's be realistic. They're not going to use condoms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going
to
spread.
I've been to those post-Olympic parties, too.
As soon as they're
done. I don't
know.
The Zeke might change things.
As soon as they're done with everything,
it's
just like a bunch of puppies on the ground,
seriously.
Isn't it? It's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they're all in good shape. There's always, I mean, it's like the entire Lithuanian team comes home pregnant, I'm told. I mean, it's
even
like,
the men. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird.
It happens.
Yeah, I don't know what goes
weird
on there.
Weird stuff happens.
Something about, it's nothing against Lithuanians. I'm just saying that they're you know, they're sexy people. All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Stryker. Appreciate
it. My pleasure. Anytime.
You can see her and meet her on social media at Dr. Stryker.
DrStryker.com. And please come on Friday. It's really going to be a terrific event. We'd love to see you there.
Oh,
I'll be hanging out, talking to people. My books will be there.
Well, that's good.
It's going to be a good event.
I can't attend because I'm going to get every disease you're talking about.